Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression, permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory, today and for future generations. Join Kel, Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
JoeDanMedia.com.
Changes.
We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger. I am your host, Cal Fritzy, and on Fridays, I fly solo. Fridays, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You hear the Red Fox Blogger Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and I have my fellow host, Tim Burton, with me there. But on Friday, yeah, I'm left to my own devices. Sigh. Which is kind of not a bad thing sometimes, but I do tend to get myself in a little bit of trouble. As you know, this is the F-bomb show, so every time you hear me say, for Fox's sake, and I did not use the F-bomb, actually, that's F-O-X, for Fox's sake, you guys know what to do. That's right, pour that shot of whiskey, because what I totally enjoy doing is getting the listeners liquored up, and then we move over to RC show. And RC sees all of us file in. It's like, I love you. No, I love you. I love you. Oh. But let's have a little, you know, fun a little later on. I've got a clip I want to share with you. Going to offer some levity to the program tonight. I don't even know how long I'm going to be on. Like I say, I fly solo. When you have a co-host and when you have guests, you get a little pampered. You get a little spoiled. So now this being alone on Friday stuff is kind of like, oh, who's going to keep me company? But you know what? It's really not an issue because Islam is the gift that keeps on giving. It never slows down. What I want to talk with you about tonight, though, is what's going on in the Middle East, of course. And there's a genocide going on. And the complacency on the global stage is unbelievable. And this involves, in particular, the Yazidis. This is very, very alarming. They are Kurds, and they flew the Islamic State of Iraq and Greater Syria militants. There's thousands of them. These are ethnic Yazidis stranded on a mountain who were hoping the Iraqi government planes would drop food to save them. Those supplies never came. All they could do was pray for help. They're dying. Babies are dying of thirst. This is IS, the Islamic State, formerly known as ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. Now they are just IS. And that is the Islamic State. This is an article out of Baghdad. After fleeing from Islamic State of Iraq and Greater Syria, a lot of people still refer to them as ISIS, they did. They escaped these militants. There's thousands of them. They're ethnic Yazidis. They're stranded on a mountain. They were hoping and praying that the Iraqi government proper would at least send in supplies, but nothing came, and they're praying for help. Now, just a week ago, Yazidis living in their ancient homeland of Sinjar in northern Iraq felt protected by Kurdish Peshmerga forces. Followers of an ancient religion derived from Zoroastrianism, the Yazidis are themselves Kurds. The Peshmerga, or those who confront death, had acquired reputations as fierce warriors who once took on Saddam Hussein's troops. But they gave way before the Sunni militants who had seized tanks and armored personnel carriers from the Iraqi military when they swept through the north in June. So, you know, this is literally a dragnet. Now, Iraq's U.S.-trained and funded army, it crumbled, leaving the Kurds and the Shiite militias to fight back against Sunni militants. who were gaining momentum after launching a weekend offensive. IS said it has now captured Iraq's biggest dam, a military base, and 15 towns. So you can see the Islamic Caliphate is definitely on the march. The Yazidis appear to be paying the heaviest humanitarian price for the ambitions of IS, which has declared a caliphate in parts of Iraq and Syria and has threatened to march on to Baghdad. This is where it gets very sad and very emotional, people, as I move into this story. Most of the families were stopped by Islamic State militants while they were leaving, and the militants killed men. Some were beheaded. This from Abu Ali, who is 38 years old, who was hiding with tens of thousands of others on Sinjar Mountain. He continues, "One of the saddest stories was one of our relatives. They beheaded all of his 15 family members in front of him and then took him with them. Yazidi women were hauled away for forced marriages or perhaps slavery, as in other towns. Some were taken to Syria," said Mr. Ali. "Many of Yazidi villages were destroyed years earlier when Saddam Hussein's troops tried to crush the Kurds. Some were abducted by his security agents. Now they are on the defensive again, ladies and gentlemen. Like, is there no peace?" Now, some people were able to be reached by telephone, witnesses, and they said about 100 babies died from thirst in the mountains infested by snakes and scorpions. But coming down from the mountains and returning to Sinjar is a risky operation. This is terrible. In other places they have captured, Islamic State militants have imposed their radical view of Islam. Women must wear full-face veil. Shiite mosques must be dynamited, and the infidels eliminated. Minorities have little chance of surviving unless they conform. Nareem Shamil, who is a Yazidi activist, said families who stayed behind in Sinjar were forced to convert to Islam. 500 women were kidnapped. Some of them sold in an auction at low prices, and others were forced to marry militants. Amnesty International said panic was gripping northern Iraq. And this from Donatella Rivera, Amnesty International Senior Crisis Response Advisor, who is currently in northern Iraq, had this to say. "Many members of minorities are even fleeing areas where there seems to be no imminent danger of an IS attack, as they are so traumatized by their recent displacement. Thousands of Iraqis, predominantly Yazidis, have fled to the Turkish border to escape IS fighters. These are reports by local officials, ladies and gentlemen." Some of the thousands of people trapped by IS militants on Sinjar Mountain have been rescued in the past 24 hours. A spokesman for a UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said Thursday. This from David Swanson. "We've just received the information right now We've just heard that people over the last 24 hours have been extracted, and the UN is mobilizing resources to ensure that these people are assisted on arrival. And this is what Mr. Swanson related by phone from Iraq. This is a tragedy of immense proportions impacting the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. Another Yazidi, who asked not to be identified, said he and his family spend their time under a tree to escape the punishing sun. We heard that there were going to be planes which would be dropping some help, but we didn't get anything, he said. Unable to return to Sinjar and fearful, the rough mountain conditions could soon kill them. Yazidis were clinging to stories of heroics unrelated to realities on the ground. We heard that there is a person called Question Shashal who is in the mountainous area, who gathered his supporters and started to fight the Islamic State with the coordination of some young men. They forced the Islamic State to return back. And this is from the Yazidi, who, like I say, wants to remain anonymous. This is pathetic, people. Seriously. What are we doing? We're allowing all these people just to perish like this? And, hey, I want to say hello to Doc and Paul and Smokey in the chat room. Hey, guys, thanks for being here. But seriously, like, we're not doing a damn thing. We're watching this happen right before our eyes. These people are literally dying on the side of a mountain by IS, the Islamic State. There is no aid. Coming their way by the looks of things at this point. We're just allowing these people to perish. What is this? Why do we allow Islam to get away with these atrocities? I was listening to a really good YouTube video by David Woods. And we know him as Apologetic 17, and he talks about the issues of Islam. And he spoke about this today. He was talking about, you know, the stages of Islam, the stealth jihad, the defensive jihad, and the jihadist takeovers, right? Where in North America, you and I, most of us, me, I'm in Canada. So us being in North America, we are at stage one of Islam, and that is the stealth jihad. And what that entails is that your Muslim neighbor likes you very much, and they love your business at their corner store, and they bob their heads. They're very, very nice. Because they are a minority in our respective countries, in Canada and the United States. Europe, they're catching up a little more quickly. But the stealth jihad, okay? They trick you. They're nice to you on the exterior, but in their hearts, they despise you. This is where we are in North America. far from it. And say North Africa and the Middle East, of course, and we're witnessing what's going on with the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. These guys are full bore ahead. They are the majority. And that is the third stage of Islam. Europe, probably closer to the second stage. And that is the Islamic defensive, how they make themselves out to be victims. And I've just got something here. Let me see what we have here. Oh, this was just updated a few hours back, and I want to thank Bigfoot in the chat room for this. The United Kingdom, they have planes ready to drop emergency aid to Iraqi refugees. This is very encouraging. British planes are to drop emergency aid supplies for Iraqi refugees living under threat from militants. Members of the Yazidi community trapped on a mountainside will be among those to receive water, tents, and lights. Fantastic. The drops are part of an £8 million package of aid, and this was announced by the UK government, bringing its total support to £13 million. Prime Minister David Cameron has welcomed U.S. airstrikes against Islamic State, IS, militants, but has ruled out any UK military action. The IS militants, a Sunni Muslim group formerly known as ISIS or ISIL, which would have been Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant, has seized Qurakash, Iraq's biggest Christian town, prompting members of the Yazidi religious community to flee. Officials have warned the Yazidis face starvation and dehydration if they remain stranded on Mount Sinjar, and slaughter at the hands of the militants if they move. This is horrifying, but I'm glad that the UK is moving in. But I'm also grateful to see that U.S. troops have already made humanitarian airdrops to Iraqis threatened by IS. That, okay. So it looks like the global stage is getting active in helping these poor people. You heard what I said at the beginning of the program about hundreds of thousands of people who have fled their homes. We have to be extremely concerned about their safety. International Development Secretary Justine Greening said the world had been horrified by the brutal persecution of vulnerable Ebola minority groups in Iraq. This aid from the British people will help the Yazidi community, who are now cut off on Mount Sinjar, get immediate emergency support. It will also ensure thousands more people get medical help, shelter, food, and clean water. Ms. Greening added, "It was absolutely vital that the UN secured access to those in need. This is a big undertaking, folks. I'm beginning to feel, well, not so bad." The new emergency aid package includes £2 million of emergency supplies for 75,000, including aid to be dropped to those trapped on Mount Sinjar. The supplies will include reusable filtration containers filled with clean water, solar lights that can be used to recharge mobile phones, and tents and tarpaulins. 3 million pounds of fast-tracked funding for charities and NGOs currently operating in Iraq. 2.5 million pounds of support for the International Committee of the Red Cross. 500,000 pounds to help coordinate the relief efforts. This is wonderful. Bigfoot, I can't thank you enough for sending this my way, because I was actually looking for something to reassure me. And I was looking right up until 5 minutes before I went to air. So you're a lifesaver, Bigfoot. The Prime Minister said the world must help religious minorities in Iraq who are under threat from the militants in their hour of desperate need. I'm going to pause it there because it looks like there's some audio here, which I would like to share. This is Michael Fallon, who has said that what we've decided is to assist the United States in the humanitarian operation. So let's take a listen to what Michael Fallon has to say, and I'm just going
to
put it on.
What we've decided today is to assist the United States in the humanitarian operation that started yesterday. We're offering technical assistance in that in terms of refueling and surveillance, where we can support that operation. And we're offering aid of our own, which we hope to drop over the next couple of days in support of the American relief effort, particularly to help the plight of those who are trapped on the mountain.
Now, the Prime Minister this morning said that he welcomes President Obama's intervention, and that means military intervention. Can you explain to the British public why Britain isn't militarily intervening, considering the past record in Iraq over the last 10 years?
Well, we welcome what the Americans are doing now, to, in particular, to bring humanitarian relief and to prevent any further suffering. But our focus is on assisting that humanitarian mission and using our military in support of the Americans in terms of refueling and surveillance to underpin their mission and to add to it with food drops of our own.
So the world is uniting. This is absolutely fantastic that we're helping these people. Can you imagine being stranded on an island, a piece of bread to share amongst 10 people, no fresh water, no lights, no warmth, infested with scorpions and snakes? My goodness. The Foreign Aid and Commonwealth Office has advised Britons not to travel to these parts of Iraq, Kurdistan, affected by fighting, and to leave areas close to the conflict. After chairing a meeting of the government's Emergency COBRA Committee on the situation in Iraq, and you just heard Defense Secretary Michael Fallon, who said, "We are offering aid of our own, which we hope to drop over the next couple of days in support of the American relief effort, particularly to help the plight of those who are trapped on the mountain." Asked why the UK was not intervening militarily, he added, "We welcome what America is doing in particular to bring humanitarian relief and to prevent any further suffering. But our focus is on assisting that humanitarian mission, using our military in support of the Americans in terms of refueling, and surveillance." Archbishop of Canterbury Justin Welby has urged the UK to welcome Christians and other religious minorities fleeing Iraq. Amen to that. He said, "What we are seeing in Iraq violates brutally people's rights to freedom of religion and belief as set out under Article 18 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It is extremely important that aid efforts are supported and that those who have been displaced are able to find safety. I believe that, like France, the United Kingdom's doors should be open to refugees, as they have been throughout history." Christian refugees, yep. I sure agree with that one, absolutely. taking this to sidebar for a minute. Christians are being persecuted as they have been for the last 1,400 years under the thumb of Islam. And I think it's time our respective Western governments woke up to the fact that Christians are being murdered for what? Because they're Christian, or they're Jewish, or they're Hindu, or they're Buddhist. And now it's time to rethink our refugee programs. Forget about the Sunni in a Shia-dominated area who was running to the embassy saying, I'm being persecuted, and that Mohammedan swims over to Canada or the United States or the UK, Australia, whatever. If we're going to take in true refugees, we have to take in the truly persecuted. And right now, those being truly persecuted are, of course, the Yazidis. Now, Mr. Cameron, he did say in an earlier statement this, I welcome President Obama's decision to accept the Iraq government's request for help and to conduct targeted U.S. airstrikes, if necessary, to help Iraqi forces as they fight back against IS terrorists to free the civilians trapped on Mount Sinjar. And I fully agree with the President that we should stand up for the values we believe in, the right to freedom and dignity, whatever your religious beliefs. Like I say, though, the UK is not planning a military intervention. But, Mr. Cameron, I just want to correct you on one minor detail here. You said, and I fully agree with the President, that we should stand up for the values we believe in the right to freedom and dignity, whatever your religious beliefs. Well, Mr. Cameron, it is Islam that is the oppressor. But Islam passes itself off as a religion, and we know that not to be a fact. Islam is a military movement. IS is a military movement. So be very, very careful how you couch your words, sir. Thank you very much. Now, the UK is especially concerned at the developing humanitarian crisis in Iraq as religious minorities flee the advance of the Islamic State forces. For now, British military help may simply not be needed. It is the Americans who have been asked by the Iraqi government to intervene, and Washington has more than enough capacity in the region if airstrikes are required. Now, Britain, along with the Americans and others, is encouraging the Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki to pursue more inclusive governing arrangements. His behavior is seen as partly responsible for many of Iraq's current problems and its difficulties in confronting the Islamic State's challenges. Back to the UK. Labour's Shadow Foreign Secretary Douglas Alexander said President Obama was right to authorize limited airstrikes. The British government should be speaking up, speaking out, and acting quickly to ensure that the international community does not simply walk by on the other side of this issue as this persecution increases. And thank you, Labour Shadow Foreign Secretary Douglas Alexander. But he added, that more international action alone, though vital to help prevent a brutal and horrific escalation, would not solve the crisis in the long term, and it would be up to Iraqis themselves to achieve political reconciliation and a strengthening of their security forces. I know a lot of people say that, well, you know, we can't be the world's policemen. Why are we the ones always having to go in and clean up the messes? And I agree with that statement. Indeed, why? Why are we offering Arab Gazans, did I get that backwards? Probably. Gazan Arabs financial aid and comfort. If the Muslims want to kill each other mano on mano, go for it. But, of course, the difference here is that Christians, Jews, and other religions are under siege. You heard me at the beginning of the program when I related that a man watched 15 of his family members beheaded in front of him before they took him as a prisoner. I saw a slide earlier today, and the IS, yeah, they just keep capturing more and more and more. And I guess they rounded up a bunch of people and did the usual, put them on the death march, got them in the mass graves, shot them in the back of the head. But there was one still in there that was rather disturbing, and that was of an IS who decided it would be coolio and really neat to start hacking away at one of the captured to behead him. Yep, he's hacking away with a big smile on his face, might I add. This is Islamic State. It's also Islam. This is Islam. This just makes me want to throw up. How can somebody possibly relish taking a knife and beheading another human being and enjoying it? They're enjoying this. That is Islam. So genocide and global complacency. But in light of the article that Bigfoot sent, I might change that show description because it looks like the UK and the United States is stepping up. Canada most certainly is. Or maybe I should leave it. Where exactly is the global complacency amongst our laypersons? The person who works in the cubicle over from you? The person with the shopping list in his or her hand at the grocery store, throwing things in their cart, more concerned about what they're going to make for supper than about what's happening with Yazidis? So where is the global complacency? That's a darn good question. I have a caller here. I think this might be Michael, and he's got his hand raised, so let's bring him on and see what he thinks about this. And hey, Michael, how are you doing today?
Good evening, Kel. I've been listening to your
how
commentary.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank God. As we know, things are not going well in respect to what's happening in Iraq. I do want to give you my perspective, especially as someone who's been involved with our military here in the United States and been fortunate to be around people who've been on the battlefield. And, of course, I've learned a lot from, you know, these individuals and their perspective. So, you know, my first point would be that without a concerted military engagement in Iraq, ISIS will never be taken out. At this stage, they're at the gates of Baghdad, and I believe within a certain period of time, Baghdad is going to fall.
Mm-hmm.
The humanitarian effort being, you know, orchestrated by whomever, whether it's the UK, America, the United Nations, is a little late. Dropping food to these people is essential, of course, because, you know, they could literally starve to death or die of dehydration. But let's look at the reality on the ground. They're surrounded by well-armed, well-motivated Muslim terrorists. And I'm embarrassed that we have a despicable, gutless coward. He's not my president, okay? And they dropped 2 500-pound bombs. I mean, that's basically all we've done is we've dropped 2 500-pound bombs to target two artillery sites that ISIS had set up, you know, to launch artillery strikes on the mountain. So at the end of the day, what's going to happen here? You know, we're going to feed these people? Okay, that's great. How are we going to get them off the mountain? What's going to be done in a military sense to stop ISIS from carrying out, you know, the mass murder of these people? You know, that's the question. I was listening to the tape of the gentleman from the UK, and I found it very disconcerting because the idea that we're going to feed these people, but we're not going to, you know, use any of our military assets, or we're going to wait for America. See, here's the problem. America was the leader of this world. America would take action to lift the veil of oppression, to free people from tyranny, from slaughter, and so forth. And Obama's taken us out of that role entirely. Other nations are not going to step up and, you know, take that role. It's just not going to happen. I mean, here's a perfect example. This situation with the Yazidi has been building also for a certain length of time, and, you know, it's like, well, you know someone's getting beaten, and day after day, you know, you're aware of it. You hear their screams, maybe even see them screaming, but you ignore it. You turn your back on them. And days go by and weeks go by, and now this individual is in a critical, dire, you know, condition where they may actually perish. So at the 11th hour, you decide to provide some kind of humanitarian assistance. But you're not going to take that person who's trying to kill that individual, who keeps beating on them, okay, slowly drawing out the lifeblood in their veins. You're not going to remove that threat, or you're going to feed them. So at the end of the day, I don't see anything positive coming out of this for these people unless there is clear, direct military intervention. It doesn't have to be boots on the ground, but it's got to be relentless punishing airstrikes, which you can do. You know, we had a great program in America called the Tomahawk missile. It's a wonderful weapon, very accurate, and it kills large quantities of terrorists at any given time. And, you know, Obama's actually doing away with that program, you know, as I speak. So I have mixed feelings about what's going on. I'm glad to see that, you know, there's going to be some help. I wonder, will the UN hold a Security Council meeting or a human rights meeting to condemn ISIS for war crimes? Now, people could say, well, ISIS is not a government. Well, in a sense, they are government because they are governing large swaths of Iraq.
Well, they certainly can be down the road if they continue on the path they're going. I mean, they've got, what, $200 billion, gazillion dollars at their disposal because they've been robbing bank centers and so on and so forth. They're very wealthy, and they very well could put together a political entity. If they establish a political system, they could be very much recognized as a political movement. So why not, try them for war crimes?
Absolutely. I mean, what do you think? Do you actually think that this humanitarian aid will make some massive breakthrough? I mean, look, already we know, both of us, anyone listening to your program, I'm sure, is informed. Christians are basically extinct in Iraq. And
mm-hmm.
whatever Christians are left, you know, some of them converted, and the ones that didn't convert, scores of them are dead, and others brutalized. But anyway, the majority of them are refugees. And they've lost everything, of course, except their life, and, of course, their faith in Christ, which is the most important thing. But nothing's...
Oh, absolutely.
Nothing, yeah, I mean, there's no intervention on that end. So what's going to happen in the next coming days or week or two, whatever? You know, is the United States and Canada and the UK going to airlift these people off this mountain and give them asylum in these nations?
That's what I'm hoping. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, I'm skeptical. And the Archbishop of Canterbury is basically a phony. You know, he's made many statements about praising Islam, and he's a very politically correct individual. So I'm not too impressed with what he said.
Oh, I think you're refusing the current archbishop with the previous one that said that Sharia is inevitable in the U.K. Is that the one you're thinking of? Maybe I'm getting them confused.
But generally speaking...
Yeah, this is the current... Yeah, that was the past archbishop who said that, and I have his name at my fingertips. I'll get it. But, yeah, this current archbishop, he makes no secret that Islam is to be looked at with a great deal of suspicion.
Okay, then I stand corrected. Didn't mean to malign the man improperly. But, okay, so what he said is encouraging, but we both know that Western nations have done nothing in the past decade to take in persecuted Christians, you know, all over the Islamic world, whether it's Pakistan, Iran, you know, of course, Iraq, Egypt.
Yeah.
There's been no movement within our governments. I know people have gone before congressional hearings to advocate for Iranian Christians who certainly should be given asylum here, and, you know, falls on deaf ears. It's a terrible tragedy, and the world is basically looking the other way. The only time there's outrage and condemnation is when a small country called the Nation of Israel, you know, goes to defend itself against bloodthirsty, murderous Muslim terrorists. And then there's great criticism of them, and the UN is, you know, wringing their hands, and these diplomatic idiots in the UN are jumping up and down, and they're screaming and yelling about atrocities and war crimes and all that nonsense. But that's the only time we see a real, you know, disposition globally. This thing in Iraq obviously became well known because it's such a large number of people, and it's gotten the press's attention. But what will we see in the next week or two? Look, the fact is, if you're not going to fight this type of enemy, if you're not going to use the weapons of war in an arena where you can, if you're not going to go on the battlefield and deal with them, you're making a grave error. And it just strengthens them. As you know, Israel has pulled out of Gaza, and I am very against this. They are now in the midst of new attacks from Gaza. Islamic Jihad and Hamas have launched about 62 rockets. They broke the ceasefire. I don't think that's a shock to anyone. And yeah. Israel has become weak. You know, this condition is so terrible, this weakness of world leaders that have the ability, you know, to use the military assets of that nation to kill these people. That's what war is about.
Oh, and this is exactly it. What I want to do, though, is I really want to thank Doc for something here. He sent something. It's a soundbite, which I would really, really like to play. And I'm just trying to bring it up. I've got so many tabs open right here. It's unbelievable. So let me see. This is not my window with the tab. Nope, that's not the one. This is, oh, darn. Don't mind me, ladies and gentlemen. I just play a professional on, you know, the radio. I really am not. I will find it. I did have it right in front of me. I believe, here it is. I found it. And I would like to play this clip right now. And this is courtesy of Doc. This is from MSN News. And this is the Christian leader ISIS beheading children. Take a listen to this. And Michael, if you want to stay with me, please do. And we'll see everybody back here in 5 minutes.
A California businessman is calling on the U.S. to do more to help Christians being persecuted in Iraq. Mark Arabo is a prominent leader of the Chaldean community, a Christian community, an ancient one that is now literally being threatened with disappearance. He joins us from San Diego, California. Thanks so much for being with us. It sounds, frankly, like a nightmare. A group of extremists bent on atrocities is now openly and officially targeting Christians in Iraq. What's going on?
This is truly a living nightmare that's not going away. Christianity in Mosul is dead, and a Christian Holocaust is in our midst. 7 weeks ago, we went to Washington, D.C., and we actually were calling this a Christian genocide. And since then, day by day, it's getting worse and worse. More children are being beheaded. Mothers are being raped and killed. Fathers are being hung. Right now, 300,000 Christians are in Iraq, fleeing, living in neighboring cities, just wanting a chance not just to survive, but to live. And we've been calling on State Department. We had a meeting at the White House last week with Ben Rhodes, myself and other Chaldean community leaders throughout the country. And what we're saying is folks should follow Francis' lead. They should offer asylum. The world community should come together. We've had tremendous success in Washington with Congressman Juan Vargas offering H.R. 683.
I want to go back. Forgive me for interrupting. I want to go back to something you said, because the atrocities committed by ISIS are well known, but still you're startling me with the severity of what you're describing. You say they are beheading children?
They are systematically beheading children and mothers and fathers. The world hasn't seen an evil like this for generations. There's actually a park in Mosul that they've actually beheaded children and put their heads on a stick, and they have them in the park. This is crimes against humanity. The whole world should come together. This is much broader than a community or a faith. This is crimes against humanity, and they're doing the most horrendous, the most heartbreaking crimes you can think of.
Now, I want to ask you specifically about what happened in Mosul, because it was widely reported that when ISIS took control of Mosul, which, depending on how you do the numbers, is the second largest city in Iraq, they gave Christians an ultimatum, which would be to convert to Islam, to pay a fine, or, in their phrase, death by the sword. It's very clear they are killing people, but are Christians managing to escape by paying a fine? Are the ones who cooperate at least assured of any safety?
Sure. So the letter that they sent out with those three items, they did ask to pay a fine, but they're actually, after they pay a fine, they're actually taking over their wives and their daughters and making them into their wives. So really it's convert or die, face death by the sword. Christians, 95% of all Christians in Mosul have fled, and 5% have converted. They've marked the red death stamp of ISIS on Christian homes, and basically saying, we know who you are, and if you come back, you will get killed.
This is almost, I'm going to ask you, forgive me for interrupting, this is almost a kind of a plague out of biblical times. They're literally marking the doors of Christian homes?
They are, and with the historian, with the letter N, to mark them as Christians. And that's why we're saying this is a Christian Holocaust within our midst, and the world community cannot turn a blind eye on something so tragic. So much of crimes are coming out. Children are being beheaded. Folks are being killed just because they're being Christian. And it's happening right now, and France is leading the way. We're hoping other countries, we hope the United Nations, recognize this as a Christian genocide. We hope everyone steps up and offers these folks a home, because this should never be happening in 2014, and it is.
Now, you're using the word genocide, and I, once again, acknowledging the atrocities of the crimes that have been committed by ISIS. Genocide is a very powerful word. Do you literally think that ISIS is trying to kill all of the Christians who fall in its hands?
They're absolutely killing every Christian they see. This is a genocide in every sense of the word. And they want everyone to convert, and they want Sharia law to be the law of the land. And we're talking about a place where Christianity was founded over 1,800 years ago. They bombed the church last week. That was 1,800-year-old church. And they're systematically destroying churches. They've already bombed 6 churches in the area.
And no one stopped them. Mark Arable, speaking on behalf of the Christians of Iraq. Thanks so much for talking with us.
The Naked Trawler, minorityhf.org. Thank you.
And there you go. And I want to thank Doc for that. I also want to make a retraction. The beauty of live radio is, and having a chat room, is that you have very well-informed listeners. And I want to thank Iggy Mum for this. And, well, Michael, it would appear that this current Archbishop of Canterbury is also very Islam-friendly, because he hosted an iftar meal at Lambeth Palace last week. And this is Archbishop Justin, who hosted an iftar meal on Wednesday evening for the Christian Muslim Forum, in which he is a patron. An iftar is the meal that Muslims share, often with other friends and neighbors, at the end of each day of fasting in the month of Ramadan. So, you know what? You were correct. I was wrong. I stand corrected. And I want to thank Iggy for setting a direct link so that I could share that with the listeners. So there you go, Michael. This is a very, very, very sad day for me. This makes me embarrassed to be an Anglican.
Well, it's not surprising. You know, I mean, let's look at the large organized churches and how corrupt they are. Let's look at the fact that they have not stood up and spoken out about the atrocities being perpetrated by Islamists. You know, they're not going to go as far as to condemn and speak the truth about the Islamic ideology, so that would be hoping for too much. But certainly they could have done more. Even in America, we have a lot of very big pastors, you know, who have these mega churches. They have gazillions of dollars. Rick Warren, Joel Osteen, you know, many, many more. These men are a disgrace to me. They are not true Christians in any sense of the word. They have a large pulpit, and they should use it and their resources to speak about these things, but they're not going to. It takes someone who has a certain level of courage to want to disseminate the truth and not be concerned with being labeled as an Islamophobe or a racist or some other idiotic label and so forth. But if I may, I just want to touch on Israel for a moment, because things have not necessarily improved there. Operation Protective Edge was about 29 days into its timeline, and then the Security Council in the Israeli cabinet held a meeting, and decision was made, which Prime Minister Netanyahu agreed with, that they should withdraw their forces, bring them back to the border where Gaza and Israel are, that they would still conduct airstrikes and artillery strikes in the event that Hamas would, you know, resume firing rockets. And they made a lot of statements that they've destroyed, you know, the majority of tunnels. Now, there were 32 tunnels that they found that infiltrated into Israel, which were a very serious threat. They found motorcycles in these tunnels also where, you know, the terrorists would hope to use them to slaughter Israeli citizens, kidnap them, women, children, the usual things that they do. Anyway, okay, so these tunnels have been destroyed. Thousands of targets, you know, control centers and training camps of Islamic Jihad and Hamas have been taken out, and a certain number of their fighters have been dispatched to Jahannam. That is the Arabic word for hell. And that's all good and well, but Hamas still exists. They have about 12,000 fighters. 3,000 of them are hardcore. Just to give a little background on those fighters, those that have died during the course of the war in the past, let's say 10 years or 20 years or whatever, you know, you have children whose fathers were Hamas fighters and the Israeli IDF martyred them and other family members. So, you know, if you know in the Arab culture, you know, there's this this desire for vengeance. So they're very motivated, let's say this select hardcore group of about 3,000 of them, and they absolutely will never lay down their arms. I mean, Hamas is never going to lay their weapons down. It's absurd to think that they would even consider it. Hamas wants an open port, which means access to the sea, which would enable them to get not just a lot more small arms and mortars, ammunition, but of course much larger rockets, and who knows, maybe even some other weapon of mass destruction. They want the Gaza crossing opened, and they want, you know, many, many demands that are unrealistic. So in light of that, I'm very disappointed the Israelis even sent representatives to indirectly talk to the Palestinian delegation and included Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and Fatah, which they did. Now they've withdrawn their delegation in light of the barrage of rockets that's been fired. Israel has responded with airstrikes. And, you know, what's the future going to be? Israel's on the front line of this war. You know, more than the United States, more than Canada, more than the UK. You know, we all fought in Afghanistan together. The UK, the UK and America were in Iraq. But Israel's been in this battle for decades and decades. And, you know, let's face it, they're fighting Muslim terrorists. You know, it's really, it's just a different geographical location, but it's the same ideological belief system that is, you know, motivating these people. As we know, Muslims believe that that land is part of the Ummah, that it is not in any way connected to the Jewish people. The Jews have no right to be there, and that they have a obligation, that they are obligated by the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad to remove the Jews from that land, which means, of course, to annihilate them. And then to occupy the entire land of Israel and so forth.
What do you think about, though, what's going on right now, what I was discussing at the beginning of the program in terms of what's going on with the persecution of the Kurds there?
Oh, it's horrific. You know, right now, the ISIS is at the gates of the capital of the Kurds. They're about 30 minutes away, or, you know, they're very close proximity. And that would be just horrific. The Kurds have a pretty, or did have a pretty good military force called the Peshmerga. Very well-trained, tough, hardened fighters. And they were battling ISIS in the beginning of this you know, going back when ISIS started its rampage in Iraq. Oh, I think that is of the utmost seriousness. God forbid if the Kurds were overrun. You know, they control a lot of oil. in northern Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
It's also close to Turkey, you know, but then, you know, Turkey is certainly the enemy of non-Muslim, freedom-loving people. Edroden, I would liken Edroden to a smaller version of Adolf Hitler. He just, you know, hasn't been able to implement the kind of genocidal slaughter of Jews that he would like to do, and probably Christians. But, yeah, you brought up some very important points in the beginning of your show. And, you know, this is, it's such a serious matter over here. And once again, not to be repetitive, the world is sitting on its hands. Western nations are doing nothing to stop this. I would call it a tsunami. It's not even a tidal wave. It's like a massive tsunami about to engulf a nation with huge oil reserves. Now, in addition... Sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just going to say, in the case of the city sitting on the side of a mountain, for goodness sake, I mean...
Well, yeah, I mean, you know what...
the most atrocious...
Right, look, you know, what ISIS did in Syria, you know, we know what they've done to civilians there, the barbarity, you know, they had slaughterhouses that they found, and, you know, I don't want to get into too much detail. I have to tell you, it's sickening. You know, and I've seen so much content. You know, I've spent an enormous time researching this stuff, as you know, and it really just turns your stomach, and it fills you, well, myself personally, with enormous disgust to see the depravity of these people and how they literally butcher and slaughter human beings. And as you said it very appropriately, they do it gleefully. They do it with enormous joy. And you know what that goes back to? It goes back to the Quranic teachings and the hadiths. That when you read about what took place during the history of Islam, you know, you're going to see the same kind of barbaric and evil behavior. And they scream, Allahu Akbar, takfir, takfir. You know, when they do this to a human being who is defenseless, you know, a person who's not armed, probably been beaten already and tortured, you know, doesn't have much energy, not much life left in them, and then they'll slaughter them in public, and they'll be doing it with great pleasure.
You know what I'm going to do is that... there are some articles I want to bring up, and Michael, please stay with me. I'm going to take a bit of a break and come back with something that I think that you would be able to expand upon and help me out with, because this is rather flabbergasting to me. But I want to go and dig up that article. We'll take a break for now. And see everybody back here in 3 minutes. But before we do that, I do want to acknowledge people that are joining the Red Fox Blogger. First of all, I'm grateful to Michael joining me in the studio. Holger was here. Iggy Mum was here. They are off to RZ's place. And we'll be going over there right after this. Well, I want to thank Bigfoot, Cal Living, DOC for the link. And... Iggy Mum, if you were still here, you'd be getting a big mwah for yours. X-Ray Coon, welcome to the program, sir, or madam. Flycatch, we have some guests here. Machi, Paul Alexander, and, of course, my Annie, and that is Southern Sense is Conservative Sense. And, of course, I want to thank everybody that listens in the archive, and I know you do. I appreciate the time that you take to spend on my humble show. But we are going to take that break. I'm going to look for that article and dissect it with Michael. See you in 3 minutes.
Another summer day is coming down the way. Paris or Rome, but I want to go home. Maybe surrounded by a million people I feel all alone. But I wanna go home. miss you, you know. And I've been keeping all the letters that I wrote to you, each one a line or two. I'm fine, baby, how are you? And I would send them, but I know that it's just not enough. I would call you back, but you deserve more than that. Another aeroplane, another sunny place. Oh, I'm lucky, I know, but I wanna go home. I've got to go home. Let me go home. I'm just too far from where you are. I wanna go home. All together. Let me go home. I've had my wrong. Baby, I'm done. I wanna go home. And it feels just like I'm living someone else's life. It's just like I've just stepped outside when everything was going right. And I know that I would send them, but it's not enough. My words were cold and flat, and you deserve more than that. Another winter's day has come and gone away in either Paris or Rome, but I wanna go home. I've got to go home. Surrounded by a million people, I still feel all alone. Let me go home. I've got to go home. All together. Let me go home. I'm just too far from where you are. I wanna go home. Let me go home. Home tonight, I'm coming back home.
God bless you all. We hope you see you soon.
And welcome back, everybody. And just to remind you, you're listening to the Red Fox Blogger. I am your host, Kel Fritzy, and Michael Green is joining me this evening. That song is called Coming Home by Gary Barlow. That is dedicated to the men and women who serve in the uniform, whether it be the military, police. That particular song was played at a funeral for an RCMP officer who was shot in the line of duty a few months back, along with three others. That was his widow's pick for the organizers to play in commemorating his life. So, Michael, yeah, I found this article that I wanted to ask you about, and this is going back to IS or ISIS, and there was this video that was circulating, and it's a video of ISIS. Back then they were called ISIS. Now they have decided that they just want to be known as IS, you know, Islamic State. These are these militants executing 1,500 Iraqi Army POWs, which, of course, is prisoner of war. Now, this video, it revealed the deadly barbarism that lies at the center of the Islamic State. The video shows Iraqi Army prisoners of war who were captured by IS despite begging to be spared. The POWs were taken, dumped in a ditch, and murdered in cold blood. The men were tossed into a river after they were executed. An IS member, as IS members shout, "Long live the Muslim nation," a voice on the tape can be heard saying, "Here was the spark ignited in Iraq. It will arise, Allah willing, until they burn the armies of the cross in Dakhid or Dabiq." A month after the founding of the so-called caliphate in Iran, I'm screwing this up. Hang on, ladies and gentlemen. A month after the founding of the so-called caliphate in Iraq and Syria, it's richer, better armed, more durable, and dangerous than ever before. They came together, and this is what they engaged. And now IS is looking to take its bloody crusade to Europe. And they will. Death to the Jews, chanted the crowd, waving the black flags of the Islamic State. They were looking for new supporters for their cause, the creation of a worldwide caliphate answering to the man who now calls himself Ibrahim, a zealot too radical even for Al-Qaeda, who has stormed through Syria and Iraq, carrying out mass executions, crucifying rivals, beheading enemies. But these marchers were not in Syria or Iraq. They were in The Hague, in the Netherlands, and their message was one tailored to the disaffected young descendants of Muslim immigrants in Europe. I wish the world was less violent than it has ever been. This is what Barack Hussein Obama claims. But something tells me that the people in Iraq and Syria, the Middle Eastern Christians being tortured, crucified, beheaded, or forced to convert to Islam, and the men in the video above would all disagree. I'll put that link in the chat room because, yes, there is a video that accompanies this article. The text is silent. There is no audio. Otherwise, I would probably play it, but I'll put that link in the chat room. Now, I have a twofold comment I want to make about this. I'm just putting the link in the chat room. There we go. Now, first of all, they rounded up 1,500 Iraqi soldiers. And in this video, you see lorry after lorry after lorry after lorry driving down the highway. And they're taken to the desert. And they're shot. And some are buried in mass graves. Others, though, are shot and dumped into the river. That's a whole lot of bodies going on there, Michael. I am wondering, too, about the water table. When you dump, you know, maybe it's 1,000 bodies into a water table system, they really are self-hating. As well, like their hatred spills onto themselves, don't you think?
Yeah, I would agree. But let's look at the basis behind this kind of barbarity. Number one, they knew they had the attention of the world stage, so it's a war of not just physical brutality, but it's a war of psychological terror. And when you take a large number of human beings and you summarily execute them, you know, you kill them in cold blood, and, of course, the cameras are going to be rolling. The videos and the pictures of that massacre, you know, were disseminated all over the Internet, and international news organizations are going to report it. That's what they want, of course, because they want to instill fear into their enemies. And, of course, anyone that does not swear allegiance to them and their ideology is the enemy, and that includes Muslims. They've slaughtered plenty of Islamic people, but their real target are Christians, which are almost done with, and now the Yazidi, which are actually Kurdish people. They're Kurds, they're Yazidis, they're connected to Kurdish people and whatnot. I just happened to see some photographs of some of the children they massacred on the Internet, and, you know, it's just, it's beyond horrific. So we're going to, you know, they're going to feed these people, but are they going to kill the people down at the bottom of the mountain who are trying to annihilate them? That's to be seen, what the United States will do. So let's look at Barack Obama. Barack Obama's done everything he could have, you know, within the confines of his authority, to enable Islamic fascism in the Middle East. And his non-action in Iraq, and going back many, many months, he could have taken, we could have taken action. especially when ISIS was out in the open, when they had long convoys of vehicles and their fighters and their weapons. You know, they're great targets for our military assets. We have great technology. You know, we could have killed them in the droves, especially before they got into Mosul. Problem is, when they get into a city, okay, now you have to send boots in on the ground if you're going to take them out, unless you're going to level the entire city, which, of course, would bring about a large civilian population, you know, collateral damage. Nobody wants to do that, but, you know, war involves that kind of, you know, tragedy, and it is a great tragedy. So by the non-action of our government, ISIS has grown step by step, and now, you know, it's this juggernaut, you know, on steroids, and at the gates of Baghdad, you know, at the door of Baghdad to take the entire nation. And then just to get back to what you said, yeah, of course, it's just horrifying that they would actually behead a child. You know, it's hard to fathom that. It's impossible for me to understand what kind of demonic, sick, twisted, barbaric mind would do that to a young child.
Before we move on, I do want to acknowledge that we've had other people just join us in the chat room, and that's Agador, the unpleasant blind guy. And Agador is actually one of my fellow hosts on RFB on Thursday afternoons at 1 p.m., and that is Islam Exposed. But I also pinch hit on other shows. But what I do as well is that I'm one of the panelists with Annie of Southern Sense's Conservative Sense, which is her Tuesdays and Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And, of course, I want to thank COG for joining us as well. It's very, very easy to sit here and be outraged, and the Internet being what it is, they're very proud of their handiwork, though. They're very, very proud. Now, if this is the Islamic State and their caliphate ambitions are what it is, and this is how they're achieving it with the shock and awe, I am shocked that Islam is still allowed to freely practice in the West. I have been saying this for quite a while, and everybody knows it, and you know it, Michael, is that Islam is not a political entity, my apologies, a religious entity. It is a political movement. They are following the will of Allah, and they are following the Sirahs and the Hadith and the Quran as dictated by Muhammad, that murderous little pedophile who was such a coward that he was a caravan robber. This person was evil. This is evil personified, what we see. When you watch that particular video from showbat.com, it is, to me, a testimonial in that we have to stop Islamic immigration and instead concentrate on helping those actually persecuted, like those who are, you know, huddling on the side of a mountain, for goodness sake. I mean, what is this, you know? The Yazidis hiding on the side of a mountain in Sinjari. This is the people we have to help now. We have to control the Islamic immigration. Michael, if we could do one thing to make sure our respective governments are aware that we have had enough, we're fed up, and we the people, we're your employers, you have to do something about this, because if we don't, give it 20 years, and it's almost too late now, but in 20 years, we most certainly will be overwhelmed, and that Islam will become more of a dominant presence in the West.
we're at a pivotal point in the history of mankind, in the history of the human race. And as I've said repeatedly, the West is not willing to take any decisive action to eliminate these terrorist organizations. That means to take them on militarily and to see it through. No half measures, no quarter measures, just full-scale war.
Yeah.
And without that willingness, you know, we have to be realistic. Right now, ISIS is positioned to take Iraq. What they're going to do is one of their main goals is to take Jordan, because Jordan is right next to Israel. Jordan's a small country. And ISIS absolutely wants to fight Israel. There is no doubt about it. And that could present a problem for Israel. So allowing ISIS to take Iraq, which is what the West is doing, positions them to move from there geographically into Jordan. They're already moving into Lebanon. You know, they have Hezbollah to deal with in Lebanon. But once again, you got Lebanon, it's right there. You know, Israel's had plenty of problems with Muslim terrorists in Lebanon. Go back to the war in 2006.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So, you know, evil can't be contained. You know, you go back to the Chamberlain thinking, Neville Chamberlain, who thought, of course, it's famous, he could appease, you know, the world's greatest mass murderer, well, one of them, excuse me, Adolf Hitler.
Oh, yeah, good old Adolf, yeah.
But the world's not trying to appease this organization, ISIS. They are basically, what they've done is turned a blind eye to it, and they've looked the other way. Now they have to kind of focus on it because of the 40,000 people on this mountain, and it's a humanitarian crisis, and, you know, they're going to try to do something. Well, all they're going to do is they're going to feed these people. They better get them off that mountain, and some military assets better be used to kill those bastards down at the bottom of that mountain, and I mean kill them by the droves, by the bushelful. Anything less than that is not going to accomplish the job. Now, on the water issue, well, absolutely. Look, they have no respect for any, you know, resources that human beings need, you know, clean water, drinking water, water to bathe in. So it's not surprising they throw the corpses in the river, as you said. But, you know, ISIS just took the largest dam in Iraq. It's the Mosul Dam Complex. Now, when you control water, because, you know, water is literally the key to life, when you control that, it's great leverage, and it lies at the Tigris River, you know, and the Tigris River,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, guess what? It flows through Baghdad. Now, of course, Baghdad's the capital. We're back to that again. So, you know, you got to give them credit. They know what they're doing. They got this thing planned out. They got some good strategists, and, you know, they're encircling Baghdad with their fighters, you know, their weapons. And now they're going for the water supply. Hey, you cut off someone's water supply, they're done.
They marched into 15 cities. They took the dam, and they're showing no signs of slowing down. I give it probably about 5 days before Baghdad is gone.
I'm not sure if it's going to fall that soon, but we got to keep our eyes on the Kurds in the north, because that's an active target of theirs. And remember, they control a lot of oil and whatnot. And the Kurds are basically, you know, they're good people. They're not a bunch of Muslim fascists, and they just want to live their life and pretty much be left alone. But the Kurds have been asking the American government for munitions, for weapons and ammunition and whatnot. You know, whether we're going to provide it to them, I don't know. I do have a person on the ground in Iraq. Can't give too much details about him. He's in special forces, and he's by Turkey. He's in northern Iraq, and more or less, you know, they're training and they're working with the Kurdish army. But, you know, once again, it's such a little, minuscule amount comparatively in the enormity of this, you know, standing terrorist army. That's what ISIS is. I still don't call them ISIS. Hope I'm not insulting them. No, they like to be called Islamic State now. But, you know, it's minuscule. It's really minuscule what's being done. It's pathetic to me. It's pathetic. And it's going to come back to haunt the West because, you know, we've spoken about it many times on the air. ISIS is a global terrorist entity with more resources, more fighters, more organized, and more funding than any other Islamist terrorist organization ever, you know, unless you go back to the Ottoman Empire.
Well, the Ottoman Empire, yeah, being no more, as it were.
This is an interesting pop-up
I got here. Don't mind me.
Can't believe
all the pop-ups that we get these days. But
we're at a pivotal point in the history of Western civilization. You know, we're really at a crossroads, and you know, what's going to be done does not look good. The future does not look good in the long term.
What are we going to do with this entity? It's global. As I aforementioned, they have designs to move into Europe. They had huge designs on Spain, of course. They have never forgotten Cordoba. So Spain is certainly one that they're gunning for. Italy is another one. What happens when they reach, say, the United Kingdom? What happens when that jihad comes to town, when Islamic State calls out to their brothers, pick up your arms, and that friendly neighbor is now gunning to kill you? And this has happened in history. We've known this. We saw what happened. And you, Michael, you brought up Neville Chamberlain. And he came back and he said, he had that paper in his hand and he says, "I have solved world peace," more or less, ad-libbing, of course. And, of course, Hitler turned around and did the exact opposite. Yep, you're right, one of the worst mass serial killers ever. But at least Neville Chamberlain loved his country, and he was really trying to look for a resolution for England, unlike the current president that sits in the White House right now. But what do we do when they reach critical mass in terms of numbers, opinions, and voting blocks? I have pessimistic viewpoints on how our respective governments are going to deal with this.
Well, they're not going to deal with it. I mean, let's face it. Right now, social media is being used all over this earth, wherever you have someone with an internet connection and, you know, a phone or a computer. So you have thousands and thousands of young Muslim men. Some of them probably are not even Islamic. You know, they're converts. And they're being amped up on jihad. So either they're going to fight in Syria or Iraq, which many of them are. And then there are those that may not leave, you know, a Western nation, and they're just going to be like a ticking time bomb. Because anybody that swears allegiance to Baghdadi, you know, we have to understand, if they live in a Western nation and, you know, this psychopathic mass murderer, Baghdadi, gives the word, you know, he gives a religious order, a fatwa, okay? The caliphate can decree a fatwa, many of them. So he gives a fatwa to go and to do jihad, go and kill the infidel, whether you're in Spain, in Italy, in the United States, in Germany, in Canada, in the UK, in Belgium, in Norway, in Sweden. Just pick a country. Now, there's no way that, intelligence agencies are going to monitor that. I mean, I don't think they have the apparatus in place to monitor it. That's why I've always spoken about the jihad on the Internet. It's the third front. There's the physical battle. There's the stealth jihad coming into the culture and society of a particular country. And there is the jihad on the Internet, in Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. And, of course, that gets very little attention. But we all know it's there. You know, we know that these organizations use these three American-created websites, too. It's astounding to radicalize and jihad up, you know, thousands and thousands of people. Every day, every night, these people are on there spewing their hate, you know, producing new videos, uploading new photos, typing on their keypad more virulent hatred. It's a massive, massive problem. And there's no
There's a lot of social forums that allow them to spew the Islamic hatred towards the West and Christians, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists. If you're not an adherent of Islam, you are, of course, the infidel and the kafir. And there's no shortage of sites in which one can visit to see the true nature of Islam. This is another issue I have in that Islam is not the religion of peace. Islam will never be the religion of peace because they will never stop the infighting amongst themselves anyway. But one thing that disturbs me is that we allow this to carry on unfettered. I get very, very distressed when I listen to the liberals carry on about how Islam is a religion of peace. As you know, Michael, I'm dealing with a very, very serious situation here in Canada, and that is with Justin Trudeau. Justin Trudeau is a friend of Islam. He is a panderer. Ladies and gentlemen, Justin Trudeau is the federal leader of the Liberal Party of Canada and could very much be Canada's next prime minister when we go to our general elections next year. If this person becomes prime minister of Canada, we're doomed. It's over because he is such camp with Islam. He has a great deal of sympathy for Islam. He's the one, okay, you guys might remember this, my American cousins. He's the one, and my UK cousins, he's the one who, when he was being interviewed on CBC, and that's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, very much a very, very state-run yuck site, when the Boston bombings occurred, he was asked by Peter Mansbridge, Mr. Trudeau, what do you think of these Boston bombings? And instead of Trudeau taking a golden opportunity to say that I condemn this wholeheartedly, this was not a political act. This was a terrorist act. He could have had so many points he could have made. But what did he say? He said, well, you know, I think we have to look into the root causes of these two individuals. Did they seem alienated? Did they seem marginalized? No. They were following the dictates of the Quran. They were doing exactly what they were told to do within the Quran. And, Michael, that just outraged Canadians like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, it's not surprising. There's a certain percentage of people that are awake, they've been enlightened, and they see the danger, and they're concerned about it. But let's be honest, the masses are not, they're not awake, they're asleep, or they're doing things that are totally disconnected from the reality of what's taking place on this earth. It's not a battle that seems to want to be fought. And that's what's the most disconcerting and disturbing thing to become aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And there are those who are willing to, you know, to fight physically, you know, in war, which is necessary. But unless the orders come from political leaders, you know, these men and some women, you know, who are heroic and incredibly brave and courageous people, I've met so many of them here in America anyway, you know, aren't going to be given an opportunity to do what they've been trained to do, and that's to defend their nation and to eliminate a violent threat.
We are down to our last 20 minutes. I want to ask you a question, and this has been coming up in the chat room of late, and this is the issue of multiculturalism. Now, Canada is an official multicultural country. It's enshrined in our charter, enshrined in our constitution, which means that we have to accept all cultures as being equal and to have an unfettered ability to practice their particular cultures, whether you be from China, Japan, England, Scotland, wherever. When you arrive on Canadian shores, you can keep your culture and practice your culture. What this has done, we have seen, is that when it was introduced in 1982, we had a very, very, very small immigration rate. Those from the Middle East or now occupied North Africa. But the Chinese were here, the Japanese were here, all sorts of wonderful, wonderful people from wonderful, wonderful countries, and they were enriching the fabric of Canada. Everybody was getting along, everybody was assimilating. The immigrant back then understood that there was core values, core Canadian values. They appreciated that. They wanted to be Canadian, but they wanted to offer a little taste of their culture. It was a wonderful, idyllic time. But then all of a sudden, we started seeing a large influx of Islamic immigrants, and they did not want to assimilate. But we still have official multiculturalism. And what we have now is those who do not want to assimilate, i.e. the Mohammedans, they do not want to embrace core Canadian values. They want to shred the fabric of Canada. We see this via the honor killings. We see this via the Al-Quds rallies. And we see this via the lawsuits that they file when somebody is critical of Islam. They take them to the human rights tribunals. Islam is not assimilating the way other cultures have. Official multiculturalism at this point is a death knell for the host country, don't you think, Michael?
Oh, absolutely. Look, the leftists, you know, the liberal politicians and the liberal brain-dead idiots that have voted these people into office, they have set the stage. They built the framework. They built the foundation for what we are facing today in the West.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why there's a great reluctance, if not a total non-interest, in Western nations. Let's look at NATO. NATO was formed as the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. It came out of after World War II. It was an important organization. It was America and European nations uniting, and I believe, of course, Canada and whatnot, to stand up to the aggression of communism, you know, mainly from Russia, you know, before
yeah.
Russia fell. And so NATO served a useful purpose, and it had some teeth. NATO has no teeth anymore. It's run by a bunch of politically correct jackasses, gutless cowards. The last time NATO did something which is really interesting is NATO went into Libya and they took out a man who should have been left alone, Muammar Gaddafi. He wasn't a nice guy, but he wasn't a fascist. He wasn't a Muslim,
yeah.
Psychopathic Mohammedan savage. And if you look at what's going on in Libya, I don't want to digress to that now, but just quickly, Libya has basically fell apart completely. It's going to become another, it's a failed state, it's an Islamist terrorist state, and Islamic fascism will take over there. So it's all part and parcel of everything that we see. You know, you can just connect the dots. Everything's connected. Multiculturalism is a colossal failure, and it has been the door opener to Islamic fascism invading the West in its ideological way that has invaded the West. And then the appeasement of it and the tolerance of it allows it to grow. You know, if you feed a cancer with the thing that, you know, will make cancer cells grow, it's going to keep growing, and it's going to keep destroying every part of your body that it attaches to, that it metastasizes to. As Islam metastasizes in the West, and it keeps getting fed by liberal leftist governments, and as long as the masses of people vote these kind of politicians into office, and they don't understand, they're committing suicide.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Agador brought up a really good point in the chat room. He said that Reagan showed Gaddafi could be controlled, and he actually was. Muammar Gaddafi was cooperating with the West. He was actually a gatekeeper to keep the North African Muslims out of Europe, but now he's gone, and Europe is being overrun. I don't want to... well, I do. They're ants. They're overrunning the colonies.
Oh, that's an excellent point. Excellent point, because, you know, Al-Qaeda, AQIM, Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, which has been Al-Qaeda in North Africa. But ISIS is now attempting to gain the allegiance and to make an alliance with Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb and, of course, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which would be in Yemen. So if you get this thing, if this thing solidifies, and it could, because right now Al-Qaeda is not, of course, you know, ISIS is kind of their enemy, but if that solidifies somehow, and it could over time, and you get these groups to unite and come under one banner, one caliph, you have a tsunami coming. There's your tsunami. And the West is not prepared to deal with this because they're not preparing. You know how you have peace with Islamic fascism? You prepare for war. That's how we had peace with Nazis. That's how we had peace with, you know, Imperial Japanese. And that's how you have peace with any enemy in a global sense. You prepare for war.
Absolutely. And we are down to our last 7 minutes of talking points. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Michael Green you've been listening to. Michael, you are... I want to say that you're quite the expert in your field and what you do. I want to thank you so very much for joining Red Fox Blogger and, of course, me. I'm Cal Fritzy. Do you have any final words that you would like to impart on the listeners?
Well, I encourage people to please pray, and if you're a Christian, pray in the name of our Savior, Jesus Christ, for the people on that mountain and these young children. And pray for Christians who are being persecuted and, you know, brutalized throughout the Islamic world. I can't say pray for peace because I don't see it. I don't see there's no peace on the horizon. Peace will come when Christ returns for those who have that belief. But there will not be peace on this earth. And we should be grateful every day when we wake up that we have the freedoms we have, and that we have safety. You know, we go to sleep in our bed at night and we don't have to worry about the kind of things that are happening to scores of people, you know, of course, mainly in the Muslim world or anyone who is under the physical threat of Muslim fascism. So always please be grateful for what you have, whatever it is in life. You know, you sit down to eat at night, you lay down in your bed. You get to hug your wife, you get to kiss your children, you get to pet your dog. Whatever things you have in your life that you really bring you pleasure and enjoyment, be very grateful for them. Because tonight, right now, there's thousands and thousands of other human beings way, way far away from where we live, and they're sleeping on top of a mountain, not knowing if the next day, you know, they'll either die of starvation, dehydration, or be murdered.
Michael, very well said. I will be speaking with you very soon again, my dear man. Thank you so very much for gracing my program tonight.
Thanks for having me on, Kel.
Always. And ladies and gentlemen, yeah, we are winding it down. But I do want to just do a quick rundown of the chat room of all the people that joined the Red Fox Blogger tonight. That is A. Wiener. I love that. That's a reference to Anthony Wiener, of course. Agador, the unpleasant blind guy. Bigfoot, COG, Cal Living. Dim Future, and Dim, don't worry, it's not that dim. We'll ensure that it's brighter. Doc, Green Inferno, we have a guest here. James Brady, Libertarian, Mercedes, Paul Alexander, Russian Bomber, Southern Sense is Conservative Sense, and that's my Annie. Squeegee Man, Yes City, and those that are visiting me in the studio, and those that will listen in archive. Ladies and gentlemen, please be apprised that there is a real threat out there. It's called Islam. We have a legacy to protect, and that is our that for our children. I'm sorry. I just can't say enough about what we have to do, because if we don't do something now, it'll be too late later. It is dire straits out there, folks, and now we're dealing with the Islamic State and what they are doing to those Kurds, what they're doing to the Yazidis stranded on a mountain. This is not human. These are not human beings. These are core animals. And my friend Mike Holt says, don't do that because you insult animals. But something does have to be done, and we have to start acting right away. Please have a conversation with your neighbor over the fence if you can. Like, I know a lot of people feel uncomfortable about bringing up the issues of Islam. I know it's very difficult for those in the workplace because sometimes discussing or disparaging or criticizing Islam can get you a pink slip. Islam is very much a creeping entity that almost seems to have a will of its own, and it affects all of us in so many different ways. We may not realize it sometimes, but it does. It's called the creeping Sharia. But do, as Michael Green says, please do pray for those souls. Please pray for the Yazidis. And let's see a resolution to IS if we can do it. Let's see a resolution and we can reach our governments and say, look, this is enough. You work for us. You're going to do our bidding. Write to your congressman, your senator. Write to your member of a provincial parliament, your member of parliament. Write to your politicians. Write to your mayor. Write to your local representative. Just ensure that you make your voice heard. A letter-writing campaign can go a long way, but one thing we do have to ensure is that we put a full stop to this right now. And on that note, I will say good night, everybody. Thank you so very much for joining me. I am Kel Fritzy. I am the Mad Fox. I am the Red Fox Blogger. Have a great weekend. I will see you back here Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. with Tim Burton, and I'll see you at Restore Australia with Mike Holt on Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and, of course, I will see you with Tim Burton in Agador Thursday at 1 p.m. at Islam Exposed. Of course, Tim and myself will also see you at the Radio Jihad Network Tuesdays at 6 p.m. I am a busy lady. Oh, and I'm sitting with Annie of Southern Sense. And once in a while, I bother Jeff at the EDL radio show. Yes, this lady is rather busy. But, hey, you know what? It's a calling. The word's got to get out there. Okay, folks, have a great weekend. And remember, it is mass Islamity, and we have to stop the insanity. Talk to you soon.